Amen. Okay, so Genesis chapter 9, and as usual, I'll just remind you where we were last week in Genesis 8. If you remember, the ark rests on Mount Ararat, the water is slowly decreasing. Noah then sent out a raven and a dove. The raven went to and fro and never returned. The dove went and found no rest and was brought back into the ark. And for me, that was a picture of two spirits, probably two types of people there as well, children of the devil and children of God. Then the dove continues to be sent out and eventually comes back with an olive leaf. And it was interesting, we looked at the olive trees can survive submerged in water, and it was probably quite high up there. It's probably less time in water than that full year. But Noah eventually left the ark once the ground was dried out. And the first thing that he did was build an altar for God, didn't he? The first thing he did when he came off that ark was to build an altar. That was his priority, worshipping and serving God. And we looked at that and obviously preached about that, about worshipping and serving God and priorities in our life. He then sacrifices one of every clean animal. Verse 21 said, "The Lord smelled a sweet savour, and the Lord said in his heart, 'I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done.'" So Noah's actions were perhaps a part of God deciding not to curse the earth again. We're going to look at that covenant as well in a second. And verse 22 says, "While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease." And obviously this truth versus the crazy various forms of doom mongering, there's a bit of a difference there, isn't there? And sadly that doom mongering seems to be lucrative too. Obviously I preach kind of at length about that, but we're going to carry on now, going to Genesis chapter 9 verse 1, which says, "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth.'" I'd like to pray now. Father, thank you for this great chapter of the Bible, many truths in this chapter, and an event in this chapter which maybe isn't, you know, as clear as other events in the Bible. Help me to just preach this just clearly and accurately and boldly, Lord, and help everyone to just really pay attention and listen to what your word's saying to them, Lord. Help everyone to be edified here and fill me with your spirit, please. Just name and pray. Amen. So they were told to go and fill the earth. And here's a question here. Could Noah and his sons replenish, fill, stock? That's what that word means there. The earth themselves? No. So for me, that's a command to mankind, isn't it? Okay, it's a command to mankind. These are the only men in the world at this point, weren't they? Okay, so it's not where you go, oh, he's only just talking to them. Well, they were the only people there. However, that's a command to mankind because they couldn't fill the earth themselves. And as far as I know, this command still stands, doesn't it? I don't think anything's changed there. And if you're wondering, well, what you're talking about, what I'm trying to say is don't fall for this overcrowding nonsense. Okay, that is an absolute lie from the pit of hell out there, right? This overcrowding that you're somehow irresponsible for having children. There are people that honestly believe, normal people believe that rubbish. They actually think that the world's overcrowded and that you're somehow doing the world harm by having children. This nation alone has vast areas of habitable land that aren't lived in. And you just drive just through town, through the country, just drive up the motorway, you just see loads of land which people could live on, couldn't they? They could plant, they could grow, they could you know, habitate it. The area of the UK, and I don't know, I keep kind of seeing different stuff in this. I think I've preached this before. I'm pretty sure with this number now, it seems to be over 240 billion square metres. Okay, that's the area of the UK. Now, if the world's population is 8 billion, right, that's basically 30 square metres each for the whole world in the UK alone. I mean, 30 square metres, you could probably have a little homestead with that, couldn't you? You could probably provide for yourself with 30 square metres, couldn't you? And look, there's plenty of room. And that's in the UK alone, let alone the rest of the world. Yeah, I'm sure, look, there are parts of the world which you probably couldn't grow much on, you couldn't live. But there are massive areas all over the world where people could live. The overcrowding thing is rubbish. It's a lie. And it's what is it? It's just teaching the opposite of what the Bible says. The Bible says, fill the earth, replenish the earth, go forth and multiply. So our world tells us the opposite. Yeah. And do you know what the issue is? The issue isn't, because people go, yeah, but I've seen some pretty crowded places. Yeah. And there are people that can't eat. And there are people. Well, the issue is cities and people not working for a living. That's the issue, isn't it? I mean, that's why we have a problem, is because there's a lot of people out there that don't work to live. And there's a lot of people out there living in overcrowded areas and living on top of each other without a job. And that's the issue. The issue is not the actual size of the world, and the issue is not people replenishing. As long as if you're replenishing and you're having children and stuff, you're teaching them a work ethic, yeah? You don't have to turn it, but 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "For even when we were with you this, we command you that if any would not work, neither should he eat." And he didn't say they're neither. He didn't say cannot work. Okay, so this isn't about people that are unable to work. These are people that choose not to work. If any would not work, yeah. If any would not work, there are people out there that just won't work, aren't there? There are people that won't work. And then sadly, there are parents and there are people out there that have children and don't teach them to work. And then you kind of somehow you've got like this kind of just generations of people that won't even go to work. But that doesn't mean that those of us who are working and have families and teach them a work ethic shouldn't be having children, does it? I mean, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? But a lot of people come out with this stuff and they start talking about population reduction and things like that. Now, look, sure, there are... Well, for me, do you know what would probably help this a bit? Would be if everyone at least knew how to just do practical jobs. If everyone knew how to grow some food, rear an animal or two, maybe maintain a property, they'd probably do all right, wouldn't they? And look, I'm not saying we all have to go back to farming, but part of the problem is as well is the kind of, well, you know, city life, industrialisation and all these sorts of jobs. And look, by all means, you know, look, if you can get a job, if you can work, great. But the problem is there's a lot of people that can't work at all, and then they're being propped up by the people that do, and there's no, you know, and the only farming going on is sort of seems less and less just real farming to provide for yourself and trade a little bit, and it's just big industrial stuff as well, and just the whole thing's a mess. But however, should that stop us having children? We're told to go forth and multiply, aren't we? Replenish the earth. And that command still stands. So, you know, for us, if you're able and you want to have children, then we should go forth and have it. And just on that as well, you know, there's this kind of, there can be amongst Christianity. I remember hearing it years ago, before I was ever involved in all sorts of churches, where people, like, I remember hearing a guy that was joking about it, going, they'd always have, like, if you had a book by a pastor, there would always be this sort of, it was like he was qualified by the fact that he had, like, who knows how many kids, like a lot more than everyone else, be like, this must be a great man of God. None of these guys weren't even saved, you know, they're like unsaved. And there's a thing here, is that, because I think people look at it that it's somehow ungodly not to have like tons and tons of children. Like, ultimately, children are a blessing, aren't they? So if you want to have them, great. If you don't, then don't. You know, it's not something that we should be judging others with, because a lot of people don't know people's situations. Sometimes people think, I've just got to have more, and they might not really want to have more, you know, or the other way around, you know, people that don't have many feel like people must think they're ungodly or something because they're not. No one really knows people's situations, do they? However, they're a blessing, and if you want blessings, have children, you know. I don't think anyone in life will look back in years to come and go, I just wish I'd had less children. Oh, if only I hadn't had that one. Well, hopefully not. You've done a bad job raising it. Maybe there are, actually, yeah. Maybe that jailbird child is just an absolute problem. Maybe you could regret that. But if we raise them properly, we do things according to God's word, we shouldn't feel like that, should we? Okay, so the world is far from overpopulated, and that's why he said in verse 1, and this is, for me, this is just an endless kind of command here for us, is, and God blessed Noah and his son, said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea, into your hand are they delivered. Now, you could look at this and say, well, tell that to the people eaten by lions, crocodile, sharks, etc., can you? You go, they didn't seem that scared when they were chomping off their legs or something else. But give those people a gun, or previously a bow and arrow, spears and similar, and the animals rightfully fear the hunter. Because this is what it's talking about. Now that once we're given that command to eat animals, well, the fear and dread is upon hunters, isn't it? You go out there on wherever it is with a gun and start shooting animals, and the fear and dread is upon you, isn't it, from them? They're going to be getting out of there, right? Okay, they don't go, oh, I'm not scared of that. You know, lions don't come running when there's gunshots going off. And I would imagine the same when there were like bows and arrow going off and animals getting hunted and killed. Look, they're getting out of there, aren't they? Even probably the toughest dinosaurs were. But they're delivered into man's hand. And how is that? Why is that? Because we have intelligence like no other animal, don't we? You know, all this sort of we're just animals is so ridiculous, isn't it? Because we have an intelligence like no other. You know, no other animals are creating the sort of weaponry that we can, and everything that goes with just being a person made in God's image and not a beast. Okay, so they could carry on thinking they're like beasts and see where that gets them. But for me, look, we're people, aren't we? We're people, and we're people with intelligence as well. And that's why every animal, the biggest, scariest, toughest looking animals out there are scared of us. If we go out with just a little bit of, you know, one of the many things that we've invented over the years, or at least we've been encouraged to use. So he then said, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. Even as a green herb have I given you all things. There didn't seem to be any dietary laws at this point, did there? Okay, he did say all things. And however, with that, I'm sure there was some common sense, wasn't there? Because I think sometimes, you know, people look at this and go, oh, they must have been eating like the nastiest, rankest scavenger animal or something, yeah? But I don't know, when I see sort of, I don't know, vultures like eating rotting dead flesh, it doesn't make me think, oh, that would be a lovely meal. You know, I don't think, oh, I want to cook up a vulture or something else. And I think there probably was common sense, which then we see being sort of reinforced in the dietary laws. A lot of them does seem to be quite common sense stuff. No, we're not bound by any of that. But carnivores as well. Would you look at like a carnivore animal and think that's going to make some good meat? Sadly, in some parts of the world, they do. But I don't know if that's really the case. But scavenging types. And I say that as well because another one that people go, well, we're not under dietary law, but here's one that's probably quite sensible that sadly we did have some clown in here before that didn't seem to understand this, was things like roadkill. Animals that have died of themselves shouldn't really been eating. Because you go, well, why not? Because look, why did it get run over? Everyone ever wondered this? Usually a lot of the time because they're diseased or they're very old and they've gone a bit senile or something else. They're not usually good meat. And we had a guy here who seemed to apparently claimed he hit it. I mean, how many times do you hit deer? Anyone hit deer regularly? Because apparently there was two that he'd hit in the space of a few months at our church, who then hung this deer, skinned it, and then made venison stew at home and then served it up to the church on a potluck. Roadkill. So anyone here who misses those potlucks, one of the reasons we cancelled them because we weren't up for everyone getting served up roadkill. But not good for you. Who knows what was up with that animal? Because you don't know, do you? All you know is that you peeled it up off the floor, scraped it off the tarmac, put it in the back of the... Seriously, this happened, okay? And this is the sort of weird stuff that you deal with. But probably why? Because there are people like that back then as well that God is like, I'm going to have to write this stuff down now, aren't I? Because that should be obvious, shouldn't it? You should go, okay, he said all creatures. However, there's some obvious things that you should think about with those things. Sick, diseased animals, things like that. You're not going, well, there's no laws. Let's get stuck in. That one, like, animal that's kind of coughing and spluttering before it drops dead in front of you. Probably wouldn't skin it and eat it, would you? Okay, so there are some common sense things. However, at this point, he's just saying, look, all creatures, you know, all living creatures are for you there. Get stuck in. He then says in verse 4, but flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, he said, shall ye not eat. So nothing alive, obviously, that goes without saying. And again, you say that, but there are people out there that will eat live animals. But in case those, you know, of you who like a rare steak or something, maybe wonder with verses like this. Maybe you look at this and go, oh, well, do I have to just have that nasty, well-done steak? It is nasty, well-done steak, so right? You've got to have it medium rare, don't you? What's going on here? Well, did anyone know that the blood-appearing liquid is actually not blood? You'll know this. Okay, it's not blood. It's actually myoglobin. So nearly all of the blood is drained from a carcass, apparently, within the first few minutes of the harvest process. So myoglobin is a heme ion containing protein found in muscle that stores oxygen and gives meat its colour. So when you see that red meat, it's red and stuff, it's not. It's just full of blood, and you're thinking, should I be eating this? Do I have to just like, hang it a bit further or anything else? No, because when they, you know, normal kind of, I don't know if you would you call it butchering or I know they do it in an abattoir, but they just hang the meat straight away, okay? And one of the reasons you don't want to just fall on the spoor whether you cook it or not is it's not just that the hanging gets rid of all the blood. And obviously they have ways of doing this, and I know like the halal way is just to like kind of cut it and let it run around, and I'm not one who gets too upset about this stuff because look, that's what they were doing throughout the Old Testament, you know, so we don't have to get too upset about that stuff. You know, maybe if you can stun it, probably not a bad idea, but there are ways as well where I think they pierce certain kind of arteries and things after death as well to drain them out. But point being, anyway, that the other thing is it's more tender, isn't it? So you want the protein, you want the muscle to break down, and that happens over aging meat. and depending on the meat, depends on the kind of prime time for that. But what you don't want to be doing is literally just killing an animal and cooking it. Yeah, and with that, you're going to be eating the blood anyway. But so he said, not. He said in verse 5 then, after that, he said, and surely your blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require, and at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. Obviously, there is something precious about blood. Now, we don't have to go as far as the Jehovah's Witnesses here, do we, who go a bit crazy about it. But blood is a bit more complex than I think we like to think as well. I know people I have... family members, in fact, who, or at least one family member, knew a friend of that family member, and have known someone else since, who had severe issues after having a blood transfusion. So it's not just a case of, oh yeah, well, a bit any old blood will do. It's actually quite serious, you know, and it is something I think if you can, you should avoid it. However, if you can't, if you're going to die, you know, obviously you're going to need it. But sometimes, look, you don't always take it that easy, you know. I don't think it's as simple as, oh yeah, it's nothing. It's precious, isn't it, blood as well? And God, obviously, you know, it's a lot more complex than we think. But then also here, he's just talking about murder here as well. Because here, for me, he's just given a death penalty for murder. He said, and surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. So the first, it seems, one of the first kind of, well, rules, laws of life is the death penalty for murder, isn't it? Right at the beginning. Not locking someone in a cage surrounded by sodomites for the rest of their life. Is it? I mean, people go, oh, you know, the death penalty, it's so, you know, barbaric. Well, how's locking someone in a cage surrounded by sodomites any better? And you go, oh, what about the people where it's proven that they didn't? Well, what about the people where it's it's proven that it was a false arrest and false conviction, who've been surrounded by sodomites their whole life? Because prisons are full of them, full of reprobates. That's why they do half of the psycho testing and stuff in prisons, because there's so many of them in there. I mean, that's not a place you want to be locked up for the rest of your life with a false conviction, any more than dying, right? And look, if you haven't rejected the gospel, well, I prefer to be dead than locked in a cage for the rest of my life, right? And look, anyway, with that, there is clearly a rule there, isn't there? There's a law there, at least, you know, a kind of, I would say, just a, again, another just endless law there that there's a death penalty for murder. Now, whether it's an animal as well, or a person that's killed someone, they have to be killed according to God. Because, look, there are people that think, you know, if I'm going to get onto that in a minute, because I just wanted to read you something quickly, because it was the case throughout history until very recently in this nation and in most nations around the world. So again, this is just another example of how backwards we've gone. And there might be people sitting here going, well, I don't think we should have the death penalty. Why? Because you've probably been brainwashed. Because you've been brainwashed by our wicked society into thinking that somehow locking people in cages is better. And look, obviously, we should have a society where we do our utmost not to get false convictions, right? Okay, and there should be a good, proper legal process, and there should be good judgment going on, and there should be a jury and things like that. Or, you know, at least it should be done as fairly as possible. And obviously, we'd want to go by God's system instead of the world's. However, up until recently, it was capital punishment. The last execution in the UK took place in the 1960s. Anyone know that? I mean, that's not that long ago. You know, 60-odd years ago, capital punishment was used in the UK, well, as we know, for centuries, pretty much as far back as you go in history. The last execution in the UK was on 13th of August 1964. Capital punishment for murder was suspended in 1965. It's always slow, isn't it, this stuff? So it won't be like, right, we're stopping it. We're just going to suspend it. And then everyone's like, oh, well, it's just a bit of suspension. Maybe if it's serious, we'll bring it back in. And eventually abolished for murder in 1969. Now, they still had it, okay? It was still, there was still capital punishment, just not for murder, which there should have been, obviously. It was 1998, the capital punishment for what? Treason and piracy. Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter if you kill someone, but treason. Oh, you know, they still had it. Treason and piracy, that's when they abolished that. Piracy with violence, by the way, it was. So if there's any violent piracy, and that was obviously to protect probably the shipping industry of the whole of, you know, the empire where the sun never set, right? Okay, and now once that kind of started being over, well, we don't really care about that anymore either. The treason thing, well, we just lock them in a cage instead. And they abolish it or just kill them privately. 1998, that was. And so basically that made Britain fully abolitionist, they call it, both in practice and in law, and that was 1998. And that's not long ago at all, is it? 25 years ago. So up until 25 years ago, there was still the death penalty in this nation. And look, I'll tell you what, we've gone backwards now. We've gone backwards. Yeah, look, the death penalty is ordained by God right after the flood. Okay, and that's something that I don't see any... Like, what's wrong with that? You're going to murder someone, you should be murdered, shouldn't you? Or, sorry, not murdered, you should be put to death, because it's not murder. Okay, it's not when people go, oh, thou shalt not kill. No, this is, we're talking about capital punishment. Okay, we're not talking about murder. Okay, so yeah, that's what should happen. But however, we have, and here's another thing that they've managed to do with this, because if you notice in verse 5 there, he said, at the hand of every beast will I require it. So there are those now that even try to excuse animals that kill people. Have you ever heard of this stuff? I saw a news article, it just made me think of this news article recently. If you turn to Exodus 21. Turn to Exodus chapter 21. I read this news article about, I think it was a pit bull that had basically killed someone. And it killed them recently. I think it was in Manchester, if I remember right. And what they said, and basically they said the police tried their utmost to contain the animal after it had killed this person. However, in the end, unfortunately, and they're almost apologising. I remember reading, I think I was reading it to my wife. I was saying, can you believe, like, the angle of this? They're basically trying to apologise for eventually, and it said something like, humanely putting this dog down. So it's just killed someone. Kill it. What do you mean? What, you tried your best to contain it? They should have killed it straight away. It's just murdered someone. It's just killed someone. It's an, the animal's killed it. It's basically a man killer. Oh, but we'll do our best. We tried our hardest to try and calm it down, see if we could maybe recondition it. Like, what's wrong with these people? And they were apologising for that, and it's not the fact that this animal's just savagely mauled some poor human being. It's so weird, isn't it? We've just got so mixed up now. So unbelievable. But yeah, that's where we're at now. But what does Exodus chapter 21 tell us in a situation with an animal? Exodus 21 and verse 28 says, if an ox gore a man or a woman, this is Exodus 21, 28, that they die, then the ox shall be surely stoned. Okay, so if an animal basically kills someone, it should be put to death. We're not going to hold the poor animal, and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. So basically, they lose that animal. Now, here's the thing, though. That's only if they're not aware, because then it says in verse 29, but if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it had been testified to his owner, and he had not kept him in, but that he had killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned. His owner also shall be put to death. Too right, eh? What? Because there are a lot of absolute morons running around with dangerous dogs right now. Is a big one here, isn't it? Dogs that they're basically training to be dangerous because they think they look tougher if they've got a bigger, tougher-looking dog than someone else. And if that dog kills someone, they should be killed as well. Unless they literally, it just was a lovely dog that suddenly just went wild and nothing had ever happened before. But let's be honest, most of these people, they can't even have their dogs around people. I remember a friend before where you just walked in the room and the dog just came charging at you. They're like, just trying to kill you. And he's like trying to grab it and kick it. And it's like, what on earth? How have you ended up with your dog like that? And if your dog's like that, what should you do? Get it put down. Care about other people. It's absolutely crazy, isn't it? And look, there can be just some bad dogs, can't there? There can be some bad eggs. There can be, and you know, it is important to look into the breeding and everything else when you buy a dog. Obviously, look, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas. Yeah, that's true. But look, when you get a dog, and even if you go through all that, you can sometimes just have a bad situation without some bad genetics or something else. And if your dog's like that, you want to make sure you get it put down. But people are just the opposite. Oh, poor little thing. Oh, it just bites the postman. Poor postman. Yeah, get the dog put down. Why should a postman get bitten every time or whatever else, you know? It's just nuts, isn't it? And that's on God's law. If your animal is basically known to attack people, if it then kills someone, you're going to get put to death. So what does he think about that? So you're going, well, that's just gamble. Just take a risk. No, look, and in the same way, I would say, look, if your dog or your whatever animal it is, and here it's going to be dogs, is attacking people, then you want to do something about that animal. I would say put it down. Oh, well, it might, it's only a chihuahua. It's not going to kill someone. Well, it might bite their finger off. Who was it who got their finger bitten the other day? It was you, wasn't it? Yeah, putting something through someone's door. Got your finger bitten. But that's not okay, is it? Why is that dog biting people's fingers and still around? Seriously, why is that okay? We're people, we're not animals. Oh, well, you shouldn't have put a fly through the door. Well, it's poor postman. Poor delivery men. Why is that okay? You just have bizarre just kind of standards because they've made these gods and idols out of animals. So the poor little dog, he just bites postman or bites whatever or attacks people. It's not okay, is it? But anyway, that's what we're dealing with now. Verse 30 says, if there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. Whether he have gored a son or have gored a daughter, according to this judgment, shall it be done unto him. So if they said, look, actually, we want some money instead, then he should give money. If the ox shall push a manservant or a maidservant, he shall give unto their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. So basically, if it attacks, a servant as well, then they should also receive some money, because that's someone that they're, basically someone that they're, that's working for them. And then the ox gets put to death. And look, that's for me, that should be a timeless law, shouldn't it? So for people that go, oh, well, poor things, or don't like the death penalty and everything else, well, get used to it. Get used to the idea of it, because when you're living in the millennial reign, all of this will be back law again. Why wouldn't it? Well, did God just do that for them? Oh, yeah, but now he's a lot more kind of modern now, and he understands, that Fido doesn't mean any harm. Well, no, of course not. And that's across the board, isn't it? Same if you've got to kill a cat. I don't really kill a cat. I don't know. But that's the way God sees it, okay? He said in verse 7 then, back to Genesis and chapter 9. Genesis 9 and verse 7 says, and you be fruitful and multiply. So we just talked obviously about just about blood being required. And you be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply therein. So again, that command again to multiply, to bring forth abundantly. And God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, and I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you. Okay, that's everyone alive today for me here again. We're all the seed of Shem, Ham, Japheth, and Noah above that. And he said in verse 10, and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, for all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is a token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, this is a token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. Okay, so the covenant is that he won't wipe out the whole world again with a flood. And by the way, the tsunami wasn't worldwide, in case anyone's wondering. Okay, so the covenant, he's no longer going to do that again, wipe out the whole world with a flood. Now, verse 12 is perpetual, basically means never ending. Okay, so it's a never ending covenant. What's the sign of the covenant? A bow or rainbow. Okay, and isn't it amazing when you see a really clear rainbow? I don't know if you've ever seen any really nice, strong, just clear. I saw one not a while ago in Lyon-Sea. Absolutely beautiful. You could just see almost where it just went down in the centre of the water. They're amazing, aren't they? What a beautiful sight. And sometimes they come out, during some pretty heavy downpours, don't they? And you see these beautiful rainbows. And you could imagine, think back to the early years following the flood. That must have been pretty reassuring, right? If you've, and obviously everyone, Shem, Ham, and Japheth's sons, and obviously daughters as well, all they're going to know all about this flood, and they're probably going to see some wickedness going on, and then it's chucking it down, and then they see the rainbow, and they think, okay, yeah, that's probably, at least he's not, this isn't going to carry on forever, yeah? Because they'd probably get a few concerns otherwise, wouldn't they? I think God's just done with us, And anyway, so... So I'd imagine it was reassuring. So a covenant where God has promised not to wipe out the world again with a flood. The worldwide flood, yeah, which was on the back of the world being filled with wickedness, wasn't it? We talked about Enoch was preaching about reprobates. You don't have to turn, well, you can if you want, but it's in Genesis. But Genesis 6 and verse 5 said, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So Enoch's preaching about reprobates. Genesis 6, 5 is saying that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That sounds pretty wicked to me, doesn't it? That sounds like the worst types of people were around, loads of them with it. It should be no surprise, really, then, should it, that some of the most disgusting, depraved, most violent people today use the rainbow as a logo. It shouldn't actually shock us or surprise us that they're actually clinging to the rainbow, the fact that they're going to be able to live out their miserable lives, their miserable physical lives, without the whole world being flooded again. It's probably quite fitting, isn't it? That's why they use the rainbow. For me, or at least spiritually, maybe they don't know. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. And I say, look, let them cling on to the fact they won't be wiped out by a sudden flood anymore. Yeah, let them cling on to that. Let them kind of pat themselves on the back. At least we'll make it through their miserable physical existence. Because there is much more, much worse awaiting them, isn't there? Because, look, here's the thing, and don't forget this, that whilst they live out their miserable, reprobate lives, what are they doing as well? They're lengthening the charge sheet, aren't they? That's what they're doing. They're just lengthening the charge sheet. The worse they do, the more they do, the more filth they get up to, the more just vile abuses, the more they just sodomize people, the more they do all this filth and just disgusting stuff that you don't even want to talk about, just the longer that charge sheet gets. The longer that punishment sheet gets, right? The more stuff that they're going to be punished for forever. So, look, he said in 2 Peter 2:4, he says that. He says, for if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. They're reserved. They're reserved. They're waiting for punishment. They're here just basically just justifying worse and worse and worse. And look, these freaks are just waiting for that day. Now, what should happen in the meantime, what should happen, is that the open, clear deviants should just be getting arrested and punished according to God's law. Okay, that's what should happen. They should just be getting rounded up. They should be getting punished according to how God would punish them, and that would be stoning to death, wouldn't it? The ones that Peter is talking about here, these ones are sneaking around. These ones are trying to pretend to be like us, claiming to hate sodomy. These are ones, and you've got to watch that as well sometimes. You know, I remember one of the past guys that we had here who seemed to just hate sodomites so much. He couldn't even keep it contained when I preached. You know, he'd just be like, such animal or something else, you know. You'd be like, oh, they're scum, you know. And then it was like, oh, what a surprise. You're wicked, yeah. You're probably a sodomite, you know. And again, probably, okay. He's railing. I don't know. I saw a lot of bad behaviour from that guy, especially around children in our church as well. But point being that these people sneak around. They try and pretend they hate it. However, whether it's those people or whether it's just the open, flagrant sodomites, it's just a matter of time, isn't it? Just a matter of time. And we're in this bizarre time now where they're just openly flaunting. It's so bizarre, isn't it? I've just been on the aeroplane. And anyone been in an airport recently on a plane? I mean, it's horrendous. It's nothing like reminding you how bad it's got than getting in an airport and on an aeroplane. I mean, it seems like it's like 50% of people are sodomites. On an aeroplane, when it comes to staff, it's about 90-odd percent now. I mean, unbelievable. We got a blessing on the way back because we got on and it was literally just sodomites everywhere. Oh, no. You know, and all you can, they're just mincing around and it just like, what do I do? And then just suddenly out of nowhere, like one of the only stewardesses on the flight just suddenly appeared and started working. Oh, thank you. I only had to hear them in the background. And I think one of them sadly gave me a sparkling water and I had to wipe the cup. Because you don't know where their hands have been, do you? Seriously. Like, what, you're trying to tell me that, oh, they're just so clean. These are filthy, filthy people. They're disgusting people. And I made a point of wiping down that cup after I had his filthy hands on it. But then, fortunately, most of the time we're dealt with by this stewardess. But they're everywhere. We were in the airport. We had to wait a long time. We had cancellations and stuff. And we're sitting in the airport just spotting them everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. And you know what it is about airports, don't you? You know what it is? It's because it's basically just maximum exposure to maximum people, isn't it? And then they're just mincing around, ultimately looking for liaisons, aren't they, and stuff. It's horrendous. Why do they take that job, the steward job? You know why. And the power that goes. They like the power. The power's nice, being able to threaten to kick someone off. And then the rest of it is just basically just constantly meeting people, isn't it? It's pretty bad, isn't it? But anyway, point being, they are everywhere. We're in a world like that, sadly, with their stupid rainbow flag and everything else. And however, it is just a matter of time. Here's another thing that I was thinking about along this line as well recently. Anyone notice the conditioning with the Philip Schofield stuff recently? Yeah? So you've got this absolute filthy, filthy animal, yeah? It's all coming out. And of course, okay, no one here is surprised. I'm sure you're not going, I just can't believe Philip Schofield is a paedophile. Yeah? Philip Schofield is a paedophile, okay? He's a sodomite, he's a paedophile. So I noticed when you read anything about Philip Schofield, the language is along the lines of something like, it was an inappropriate relationship. Anyone see this one? An inappropriate relationship with a 10-year-old boy. What? Oh, it was inappropriate. And then someone else was highlighting Philip Schofield lied. I don't care if he lied till he's blue in the face. He's a sodomite. He's a paedophile. It's unbelievable. Look, how bad has it got when you've got this open sodomite, this open paedophile, who they're now just talking about this inappropriate relationship and there was a bit of lying and we need to get to the bottom of the lies. Now, how about he should be arrested and killed, shouldn't he? He should be put to death. And it's got so bad now, hasn't it, that we're in this world now where instead of just what was throughout time, pretty much, when these people were exposed, they were arrested and put to death, or something along those lines, depending on the nation and how godly it was, we've now got to the point where you've got someone who's just been flaunting it all over the television, who's not only been abusing some young boy, but they've put on when he was exposed as a sodomite, they started trying to claim all over the place, what a brave guy. There was all these things coming out, brave Philip Schofield, and you know, because he's come out to everyone else, and the guy still is a horrible, disgusting, vile paedophile. And what a situation we're in now. And anyway, point being that how would that situation have been described by regular people less than 100 years ago? Much less than 100 years ago. How would Philip Schofield have been described? He's a filthy paedophile. Filthy dog. Filthy paedophile. He would have been getting just hounded, probably attacked, beaten up, slung in prison, probably got a pounding on the way in. Now, they're just talking about him. What do they say? Like I said, having an inappropriate relationship. Absolutely crazy, isn't it? But anyway, it's bad, it's disgusting. But when you see that rainbow being used, the point of all this is to say this, just remind yourself of verse 9 here, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. Now go back to Genesis 9, where it's also interesting that the rainbow covenant stolen by the alphabet psychopaths appears in a chapter where many would say, or what many would say is the first Sodomite event recorded in the Bible. And we're going to look at this with the remaining time here. Just last point on that, with all this filth and everything everywhere, look, they are going to get it, okay? They're going to get it. It's going to be bad, okay? It is a bit gutting when you see all this stuff going on and how filthy and disgusting it is when you're around them, you're in airports, you're on airplanes, you're just seeing all this filth everywhere. However, they are going to get it, okay? And just remind yourself of that, because these are some filthy, filthy people. I mean, it is horrendous what's going on out there. Oh, and it's got to the point where normal people are just allowing them around, the children are just, it's bad, isn't it? However, all we can do is keep our kids safe, keep trying to warn people, and keep trying to get people saved, right? And just remind yourselves that the punishment is going to be severe, isn't it? Absolutely severe for them. Okay, but verse 18, it says, "And the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham is the father of Canaan. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. And Noah began to be an husbandman, and he planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered within his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. And their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. And Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done unto him. And he said, Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. And he said, Blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant." So we're going to look at this passage again, because it is an interesting passage, but it is a passage which has a lot of different views on and different interpretations, and probably, I would say, likely amongst you know, preachers that are saved and believe the truth and preach the truth, a lot of things. It's not 100% clear, okay? Let's start with that. However, I've got a couple of things that I believe here, a couple of options here. We look at it again. So look at verse 20. It says, "And Noah began to be an husbandman, and he planted a vineyard." Now, this is a farmer, okay? And he'd retired, obviously, from ark building at this point. Verse 21 says, "And he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered within his tent." So he's planted a vineyard, okay? And I'm sure that he's probably aware of the brewing process from his 600 years of life pre-flood, yeah? All sorts of wickedness. Every imagination of man's heart was evil and wicked. So I'm sure there was a lot of alcohol being made and boozing and everything else. Now, here's a point here, that he drank of the wine. We're going to look after. You could maybe give him a little get out here and say, do we know for sure that Noah purposely tried to get drunk, or maybe he was given the wine to drink by maybe Ham, or we're going to look at another possibility here, but probably not. It's probably that he's, for whatever reason, look, this guy was a great guy, yeah? He walked with God, he was a preacher of righteousness, but he did live for 900 something years, okay? And everyone here, I'm sure, you know, as the years go by, there are ways you might slip up in life. Now, I hope no one here is going to go and start boozing, okay? And obviously, if you're boozing and you're a drunkard, you get kicked out of the church. However, look, everyone here has slipped up in different ways and has had weak moments and other things and other sins in life. Here we see this one with Noah. It's likely that this was something purposeful. Now, I know people, have you heard of these people that try to say that juice just naturally ferments? Anyone ever heard this sort of stuff? So they'll try and claim, oh, well, they're all just drinking alcoholic wine because they didn't have refrigeration, juice just naturally ferments. But not to the extent to get someone drunk. I mean, that requires a specific process, okay? And obviously it's not a very complicated process, but it does require that fermentation process, because without that, you're talking about, I think, maximum about 0.5% of alcohol. Okay, and by the time you drink that and actually guzzle 0.5% in some going off fruit juice, you ain't getting drunk, all right? Okay, and that's the maximum it'll probably get to, which is, by the way, about a 20th of some of the weakest alcoholic drinks, okay? Or at least, you know, something close to that. So for me, what we're seeing here is Noah likely purposely drunk alcoholic wine. Okay, what was the result? He was drunken. Okay, now notice it didn't tell us how much he drank. He drank of the wine and was drunken. Now he was clearly, when you look at the story, pretty drunken by the sounds of it. However, look, that's what alcohol does. Alcoholic wine makes you drunk. Okay? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how little you think is okay to have. You're just a little bit drunk. It's such a nonsense argument out there where you hear these Christians go, well, I don't get drunk. Why are you drinking wine then? Why are you drinking wine if you're not getting drunk? What are you drinking it for? Is it just the lovely taste of wine? Why don't you have a glass of grape juice then? A glass of nice fruit juice, and then you won't have that nasty, bitter, alcoholic taste with it. It's ridiculous, isn't it? So why are you drinking alcoholic wine? Because you want to get a little bit drunk. Okay, well, it's all the same stuff. First story of drunkenness in the Bible, is it a good story? No, it is an appalling story, isn't it? If it's what we think it might be, and we're going to look at this. Because, look, and just a point on that, I kind of thought about this, so I was writing these notes, yeah. Say marijuana was legal, and is it getting legal? Is it just at least decriminalised or something? I don't know what the situation. All I find is I just smell it everywhere now, wherever you're going, somewhere. All you can smell is marijuana. But how about if I said, well, I don't get stoned, I just smoke one joint in the evening? Would everyone think that was okay? Oh, no, well, I don't get stoned, I just smoke one joint, you know? That's what I do in the evening, just to relax a bit, you know? But I'm not, no, everyone would go, you're a stoner. What's wrong with you? But what's the difference with alcohol? What's the difference with a glass of wine? Or even worse, how about I don't get high, I just snort one line of cocaine when I get in from work? That's what I do. I'm not getting high, what's the problem? You know? I don't do a lot of it, I just one line. You know, it's just bizarre, isn't it? Oh, because it's legal, that's okay. Oh, yeah, because, you know, because our government know everything, don't they? Oh, it's madness, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous. And what was the result for Noah? The result for the first mention of alcohol and drunkenness in the Bible, he was naked. Next thing you know, he's naked. And for anyone that doesn't kind of, and hopefully, you know, hopefully the kids here, you know, they won't have to ever be around this sort of stuff and know about this stuff. But look, that's just commonplace, isn't it? Those of you that grew up in the world, that's commonplace, isn't it? Drunkenness and nakedness. And in fact, it's commonplace before they're to the point where they're stumbling around and completely naked. Because you drive through a town centre at night in this nation, and you're going to see a lot of semi-nakedness, the way people dress, when they're probably on their way to getting drunk. Let alone the fact of, I mean, it's madness, isn't it? But look, let alone afterwards, and a lot of this stuff goes on. And it, I mean, what an advert for never drinking ever, isn't it? This part of this story alone. Let alone as you carry on through the Bible, let alone when you get to, you know, to Lot and his daughters. But anyway, so verse 22 says, "And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without." Now, a couple of points here. Number one, where was Noah uncovered? Verse 21 said, "In his tent." Okay, so why was Ham in there? Why was Ham in there? Or did he? Are we saying he went past an open door? Why is he looking in there? What's going on there? That's a bit of a strange part of it. Number two, why was he then telling his two brothers? Now, it's as if he wants to shame him, isn't it? That's what it feels like, that he wants to shame him. And now that could go along with the theory that this was more than just embarrassing his dad. Okay? So, point being, if Ham was some sort of reprobate pervert, or it could be someone else we're going to look at as well, defiling isn't enough, okay? They want to shame, they want to embarrass their victims, okay? If he was just some complete sick, twisted guy, it's not enough just to defile them, just to do something bad. They just want to destroy their victims, okay? And you could add to this as well, Noah was a man of God, wasn't he? And of course, this is a low point for him, if it was purposeful boozing. But it makes you think of these freaks that target men of God as well. And there's a lot of them out there, all right? And obviously, that's on my mind because I know it's just going to come more and more, that sort of stuff. But they want to hurt and destroy. And they will throw anything they can at them. They'll do anything. Like when we look at the pastors that many people have listened to over years, these people don't just leave a church, do they? So like, right, well, it's not for me, I'm not happy, or whatever's happened, I won't just leave. They will literally just throw everything they can at them. Any half-truth, anything they can kind of make it sound like they're worse than they are, whatever it is, you know, any sort of like, because these are just normal men, they're going to have weaknesses, they're going to have, you know, they're going to have things in life which, you know, they're not perfect people, but they'll take a little half of it and then just try and destroy them. And here it's like, it's almost like if this is the case, that not only has he done something terrible, he's then afterwards just like trying to tell other people and just shame and just destroy him. It seems vindictive if that's the scenario. And Look, like I said, I don't know. I'm sure this was, at least after this, probably the end of Noah's preaching days anyway. But, I mean, what a terrible story if so, because we're going to look at this. Because it says, look, people might say, well, how do we know that Ham abused him? Well, look at verse 23. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and their face were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. So that was a correct response. They didn't need to see that. They did their best to protect his honour. And it says in verse 24, Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done unto him. Now, it didn't say that he found out, okay? He knew what he had done unto him. That doesn't sound like his son had just kind of seen him naked, right? Now, I want to just, before I carry on with that option, just point out option two to you here. Who's his younger son? Well, we don't know. I don't think we're ever given the ages of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. However, we always hear him in the order of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, don't we? Now, I don't know which order that is, younger to older or older to younger, but it doesn't necessarily sound like Ham's the younger one, does it? Now, before you go, where's he going with this? Well, what would he describe? How would the Bible describe his grandson? Anyone know? Describing him as his son, wouldn't he? Who's his grandson? Canaan. Which might explain why Canaan gets a curse and not Ham. Something to think about here. Okay, so that for me is option two. Option one is Ham's abused him. Option two is Canaan's abused him. Because let's keep reading. Before we keep reading, we're going to have a quick look at something here. Because obviously having a garment on him doesn't make him know that Ham had told the other two. He knew, it said, what his younger son had done unto him, and that's, and obviously it can be either Ham, maybe he is his younger son, or maybe it's Canaan, his grandson. Verse 22, it says, and Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father. Yeah, so at this point, for me, Canaan is clearly alive. Some people have some other theories. They're trying to say that maybe like he had abused actually Noah's wife, and then there was Canaan. That doesn't make sense to me at all, because he's cursing him straight after. So turn to Leviticus 18. Because, look, the nakedness of his father, for me, is a euphemism for something much worse. And in Leviticus 18, Moses is being given laws by God, okay, who says this in Leviticus 18. And we see it in many places in the Bible. But Leviticus 18, he's kind of giving all this list, and from verse 6 we're going to look at. Leviticus 18:6 says, none of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. Oh, maybe it's just talking about seeing the naked. Verse 7 says, the nakedness of thy father or the nakedness of thy mother shalt thou not uncover. She is thy mother, thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. But look at verse 14, where it's then used interchangeably with the word approach. It says in verse 14, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's brother, thou shalt not approach to his wife, she is thine aunt. I think it's pretty clear what the euphemism is here, yeah? So obviously talking about adultery there, The Bible will use euphemisms rather than spelling it out, okay? Now, keep a finger here and go back to Genesis 9, where Ham saw the nakedness of his father, that his father woke and knew what he had done to him. It's starting to look pretty bad, isn't it, with that in mind, yeah? Either that, or he walked past the tent, noticed his naked, drunken father, and didn't keep quiet about it, and instead told his brothers. So Noah then cursed Ham's son and his seed for generations to come. Doesn't really make sense, does it? Not to me. Look at verse 25, and he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. And he said, blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. Now, this is also prophetic, with Abraham eventually coming from the line of Shem, doesn't he? Japheth possibly representing maybe the Gentiles, you could say, that eventually Abraham's seed through, obviously, faith in Christ. And Canaan, a servant of servants, maybe representing the lowest, those rejected by God. But here's something else interesting about the line coming from Ham's son Canaan. So like we said, either Ham or Canaan here for me, because look, turn over to Genesis 10. I don't think this is any of this is coincidence. So keep your fingers still in Leviticus 18. Turn over to Genesis 10, where it says in verse 15, And Canaan begat Sidon, his firstborn. So this is now Canaan's line. And Heth, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgazite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvadite, and the Zemurite, and the Hamathite. And afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gera unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Laisha. For me, now you could go, well, that's kind of as far as it went. That seems like they're cities to me. That seems like the border cities. As thou comest to Gera unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Laisha. So that seems to me that that line from Canaan were also inhabiting Sodom and Gomorrah. And what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah? They end up being a den of filthy faggots. Like, absolutely disgusting. There are people trying to rape new people that come into town and stuff. I mean, it couldn't really get any worse. It said in verse 20, these are sons of Ham after their families, after their tongues, in their countries and in their nations. Now, back in Leviticus 18, which had all of those different kinds of incest, yeah? Leviticus 18, if you've ever read it, it's pretty grim reading. It's just kind of all this instruction, none of this filth, bestiality it's got in there. And then it says in Leviticus 18 and verse 22, Leviticus 18, 22 says, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind, it is abomination. Now look at verse 24. It then says, defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out before you. So in all these, and one of those was lying with mankind as with womankind, that abomination. And by the way, that includes women doing the same as well, okay? Because often we just focus on that. It's as disgusting, okay? It's not, oh, well, that's not so bad, because they've been pushing that filth on us for a lot longer, okay? That is disgusting, okay? It's absolutely vile as well, and exactly the same, those people deserve the death penalty as well. Oh, well, it's okay because they're just kind of women, you know, they're a bit prettier, so it's not so bad. No, it's disgusting. It's completely against nature, okay? It's vile and it's a symptom of a reprobate, okay? Just to make that clear. But obviously here, you know, it just spells it out. You know, clearly, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind, it is abomination. Now, he said, for in all these, we looked at verse 24, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you. Who are the nations that were cast out? Canaanites, Jebusites, Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, Girgashites too, all in that line from Canaan. All in the line from Canaan. That's who the nations were. That's who they were casting out. It was all the line from Canaan. So it sounds to me like if Ham, or like I said, his son Canaan, who like I said would have been described as his younger son because he was a grandson of him, and that's how the Bible describes then, if Ham or Canaan did abuse his father, Canaan and his seed seemed to follow in those footsteps, didn't they? Kind of like reprobate nations, aren't they? Just this disgusting nations of reprobates. And the Israelites were commanded to wipe them out centuries later. But it did say that they ended up being, he said he'll be a servant. And there was a physical fulfillment, by the way. And you know, you can turn there if you want. Turn to 1 Kings 9 just to see that, because under Solomon's reign, they didn't wipe them all out. So remember, he did say to him, he said, and he'll end up being a servant of servants. Well, we do see in 1 Kings chapter 9 and verse 20, under Solomon's reign, 1 Kings 9:20, it says, and 1 Kings 9:20 says that all the people that were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, which were not of the children of Israel, the children that were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel also were not able utterly to destroy, upon those did Solomon levy a tribute of bond service unto this day. So it was a physical fulfillment as well. However, look, there's a curse put upon these people, and there's a curse put upon Canaan. It seems to me that that's the reason. I've kind of started leaning today to that, I think, Canaan. I think he's the younger son. Why is Ham the younger son out of Shem, Ham and Japheth? It doesn't really make sense. It makes sense why the curse was put on Canaan. Ham maybe saw him doing it, or maybe Ham's tried to cover up, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Ham was wicked as well. You know, that does happen, doesn't it, as well? Maybe that's why Canaan was a filthy little pervert. Maybe it was none of that at all, and he just happened to see him naked and thought he'd curse his grandson for it. I don't see that. Now, it's not completely clear, so you can't really be dogmatic with stuff like this. And look, you know, why is it not completely clear? I don't know. Maybe because some things God likes us to study out. I think the result of those nations, I think the fact that they end up going to Sodom and Gomorrah and things like that, for me, kind of paint that picture for me. However, maybe not, but here's the thing. It does make you think as well how, look, wicked people often raise wicked kids as well. Okay, and maybe they both were. Maybe Ham and Canaan, and what went on after Canaan? Wickedness. Wicked lines coming out of him, wicked lines that were doing all this stuff. He talks about the abominations, they did all this stuff. They were passing their kids through the fire. They were full of sodomy, they're full of bestiality. All this is filthy, sick, disgusting stuff. And these were all the line from Canaan. And you know, it's a warning, isn't it, to many out there as well, that, look, you know, we've got to make sure we're right, because even just lesser things, look, a lot of time kids just kind of, well, as we know, you know, that iniquity is visited until the third and fourth generation, isn't it? And we want to make sure that we're right, because, look, you don't want to see that guy, you know, even nothing like this, just sins going on down your line and stuff. But here, it's like the worst, vilest stuff, isn't it? I don't know, maybe it was already too late for Canaan here, but maybe that curse, look, was already done. But verse 28 says, and Noah lived after the flood 350 years, back in Genesis there, sorry. And the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. So what a sad end. Now, you know, there's a couple of, I heard someone say this about this once, going, well, would God have let that happen to Noah? And you could go, well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty, I mean, can you imagine that? If that is what it seems to be. We've obviously are seeing that kind of similar sort of language used for that sort of filthy thing, you know, as seeing the nakedness or looking upon or uncovering the nakedness, that sort of thing. You know, you go, well, how did that happen? Well, here's a warning here. Is that if what it seems like, Noah walked with God, yeah? Noah knew that, I have no doubt, without even before the law, Noah knew that you shouldn't be getting drunk, yeah? Drunkenness. Now, Noah chose, to whom much is given, much should be required. Noah chose for every reason to do that. And a lot of time when we just choose willfully to go into some sort of, and that's a bad sin, drunkenness, isn't it, as well? It's a bad enough sin that people get kicked out of churches for it, yeah? It's not like just, oh, it's just, you know, just because our society says it's okay. And Noah chooses to go and do that, and it looks to me like the repercussions of that, and that tearing down ultimately of the fence of that hedge around you, or whatever you want to call it. Because, look, we do have protection in life, don't we? Yeah, look, you know, the angel of the Lord encampeth around those that fear him, doesn't it? You know, if you abide in the shadow of the Almighty, under the shadow of the Almighty, he'll give his angels charge over thee. So, look, I think you just let down your defences when you do stuff like that, don't you? And here, like, it seems to me, from what I think, that probably one of the worst things happened to him. What a horrible thing. And he ended up being here. It says he lived 950 years. He was the third oldest person ever. Jared was 962, and his grandson Methuselah, 969 years old. So Noah lived a ripe old age as well. And I don't know at what point that happened in his life, but that's a pretty bad ending, isn't it? If I'm right about that. But if I'm wrong, then sorry, you know, at least it was only 20 odd minutes of the sermon. Hopefully you got something out of the rest of it. And on that, we're going to go to the Lord in the word of prayer. Father, thank you for, just so many great things we get out of your word, Lord. And the fact that, you know, it's not just kind of a list of just straight down the line stuff, that a lot of your word requires study and requires us to go into other parts of the Bible. And it's just an amazing book, and so much truth in there, it's so rewarding studying it as well and trying to get to the bottom of things. But also help us to not, you know, be of private interpretation, to not sort of hang our hats on our own interpretation, and to obviously get our doctrine and get the clear truths out of the Bible first, and then to enjoy the sometimes things which can be speculated upon as well, Lord. And Lord, just help us to put what we have learnt today, just in our hearts and in our minds, Lord, to know that you have made a covenant, you know, with people, that you're not going to destroy the world, and that rainbow, what a beautiful thing that is to remind us. You're not going to destroy the world with a flood again, but Just help us to remember as well that those wicked people that have abused that, that have stolen that rainbow, and maybe for good reason for them, where they want to just remind themselves that they might get through this physical life doing all this wickedness, ultimately, Lord, you know, let's just remember what's going to happen to them at the end, and take solace that you are a righteous judge, Lord. You're going to judge this wickedness, and we can just have, you know, just have that faith and security, knowing that you will give these people what they deserve. Help us to all get home safely, Lord. Help us to return back on Sunday for another day in your house. In Jesus' name, for all of this. Amen.